and welcome to Riddles in the Dark, sponsored by the Mythgard Institute. This is Corey Olson subbing in for Dave Kale as the introducer of our episodes. I'm not used to doing this. This is, I think, as Yana has just pointed out, I think our first ever Riddles in the Dark episode without Dave.
I think
Dave.
It is.
Isn't it? He's been on the road and I couldn't make it, and rather than push off our mid-year review any further, we decided to forge ahead without him. So we are here. I am joined today by Trish Lambert and by one of our other producers, Laura Burkholz, who has also been, you will know from the Digest episodes with Trish. So good afternoon to you, Trish and Laura.
Known as Olsen's Uppity Women. I mean, we have Tolkien's uppity women, and we have Olsen's uppity women.
Exactly, yes. Trish is making a reference to the paper that she is writing on Tolkien's uppity
women. That's right.
Yes. Okay, so what we're doing here today is our mid-year review episode. Basically, we have come to the middle point in our second season, the halfway through the that time period from the release of film one to the release of film two. And of course, with the release of the trailer recently, we have clearly begun the marketing push season for the second film. So I'm assuming that more things such as trailers and whatnot will be released over the next, few months, so that we will begin to get more content, promotional content released by Warner Brothers to be discussing over the next few months as well. So we'll be kind of entering into that different season of analysis and discussion as we lead up to the film. But we thought it would be a good opportunity, especially since with the trailer in particular, some things have been released and some news has happened which reflects upon our previous riddles, that we would take the opportunity to go through the riddles that we have already discussed over the last 6 months, sort of comment on those, review what we have learned and if we have gained any more information on those, and also to go over the separate conundrum that Laura and Trish have devised, in which actually I haven't even answered yet. So we're going to do those things here today. So
also let me say, we want to probably say this at the beginning and at the end, that at this mid-year review time, then an unspecified length of time anyway, all of the riddles and all of the conundrum will be reopened on the Riddles in the Dark predictions page. We've had a lot of listeners join us, on going through the year, and many have not had a chance to go and put their answers in on the early riddles because they were closed out. So for an unspecified length of time, I'm thinking maybe a month, we will have all of the riddles and conundrum open on the Facebook page, the Riddles in the Dark predictions page, so people can catch up on their answers. If you feel the need to change an answer, you can do that. We're not going to be policing anybody. And then we'll go back to, only having them up, the latest ones up, for a limited length of time.
Yes, yeah. And of course, as always, we rely upon people's honesty and abiding by the rules, because, this is a high-stakes competition right here.
And, sure is.
With as much on the line as is on the line in this competition, we really need everybody to play by the rules.
That's right.
That's right.
And if everybody wants to go back and side with me on the Bard riddle after seeing the first trailer, that's okay.
Yeah. I still remain.
Oh, that's right. I need to pull the grid up here too so I can see.
Yes. Art, the winner does get a 1/14th share. It's just a question of what indeed they get a 1/14th share of. But absolutely, yes, yes. The one thing, Art, I can promise is that cartage and tolls will not be a problem. So you don't have to worry about that. There's no hidden cost. It'll be fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, shall we go ahead and jump right into this? Let me read. Let me get back over here. I'll read the first riddle that we started out with. Is everybody ready to go?
I'm ready.
Yep. Ready to be talking this stuff? Okay. So riddle 2.01, how will the film treat Bjorn's relationship with the goblins? A, he resents him for displacing him from his mountain territory, which is the book answer. B, he has a more personal grudge against them from his own or family history, as in they killed my parents or similar. C, his hatred against the goblins is in some way explicitly linked to Thorin and his family history. He has no particular grudge against the goblins at all. Or D, none of the above.
Okay.
And
well, we don't have any more information about this than we did before, really.
No, and it's actually one thing that's really interesting is how little we've gotten about Bjorn. I mean, that one little 1 second clip in the trailer of like the bear trying to get through the door is almost the sum total of what we've gotten about Bjorn's participation in film two. It still remains kind of a question of how much of him we're going to get. I mean, are we even going to get a, you know, long piece of exposition from him? Are we going to get dinner in Bjorn's house and conversation with Bjorn and Bjorn telling his story? That certainly seems likely, but it's not yet 100% definite that we're even going to get that much from him.
Well, we know we have Bjorn torture.
Right.
Bjorn torture,
but even
and
that
we have
might
Bjorn
end up in the extended edition, I wonder, you know? Yeah, and we have, we have a couple things. We've got the pictures. There's the stills of the, you know, the company, the actor sitting in the big chair and having the big stein and, you know, laughing about the inside of Bjorn's house. And then there's also that one itty bitty, I think it was on a video log, where there's an axe, you know, that gets like somebody's chopping wood and they put, and then there's a bear walking away in the background. And that's, you're right, that's about it. Now, it's interesting to me, and I'm sure I'm the voice of the minority here, but it's interesting to me that everybody, and I don't mean just us, but it seems like the whole fandom, has assumed that bear that is chasing them is actually Bjorn. And I think it's possible that it's not Bjorn, that it may be like a guard bear or something, or one of Bjorn's relatives. But I don't know that we necessarily should absolutely assume that that's...
No, we shouldn't absolutely assume. I mean, as we discussed in our trailer episode, the sheer size of the bear head, it's really hard to believe that it's anyone but Bjorn. Because obviously Bjorn's got to be the biggest of the bears, right? I mean, he can't have bear guards who are bigger than he is. And there can't be bears very much bigger than that. I can't imagine.
Well, the thing that just seems illogical to me is why would he be chasing him into his own house? So that's the only, you know, I mean, I
agree.
We'll see in December.
We'll see. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, how they're going to get from that, how they're, you know, what they're going to, the fact that they go into Bjorn's house, that seems relatively clear. You know, the fact that it is Bjorn's house, that they're holding the bear off, you know, from that. Right. That shot takes place inside Bjorn's house seems clear. You know, and as you say, the business with the chair shows that it's there. Again, that doesn't show me how long they spend there. It doesn't tell me how much we learn about Bjorn as a character.
No.
So, you know, I'm still going to be curious about that, but it is one of the things that I have been interested in its absence. I'm kind of wondering if they're saving it for a Bjorn trailer later on where we get a bunch more of Bjorn.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Now, you know, Pete actually brings up a point that I had not thought of. The scene that we're seeing in the trailer might not be when they first arrive. It could have been the kind of thing where it's like, don't go outside.
Right.
You know, there's things outside.
That's been my optimistic hope all the way along, you know, that wasn't, because that was certainly the easiest thing. The difficulty with it's being Bjorn that they're holding off through the door is like, as I've said, I think it was on Twitter, like it's hard to see how that ends well. You know, like how do you get from we are barricading the door of your house against you while you are like slavering and foaming at the door
hospitality.
Exactly right. It's not impossible to bridge, but you know, that's a challenging social situation. It really is. So I think that it's to me, that was always my immediate and most hopeful interpretation of that, is that it is, you know, that like, you know, hey, look, I told you the place is guarded at night, don't go outside. Again, that is premised upon the idea of the bear at the door not being Bjorn, of which I'm somewhat doubtful. But
I'm hoping like you that there's going to be a trailer you know, that's more Bjorn, got a lot more Bjorn.
Right.
You know, we still got Comic-Con coming up. You know, we might get some
right.
Bjorn at Comic-Con.
Yeah, get some clues.
If he's going to play any kind of role in the Battle of Five Armies, which I'm assuming he's going to.
Yes.
You know.
Can't imagine he won't.
There's got to be some development of him in this thing, you know, in terms of telling a story or, you know, even if we don't get the goblin torture until the extended edition. You know, there's got to be some kind of, you know, backstory that he tells or, you know. I guess, Laura, we should have also asked if we were going to get, you know, animals on, you know, on their hind legs serving.
Yeah, I don't know. I really doubt that.
I really doubt that, too. I kind of think that that's in, like, what I would call the tra-la-la-lolly category of Hobbit moments.
Yeah,
that probably would not be in there.
They'd probably have to do it CGI, and it would probably be really horrible to do it that way.
Yeah,
so you're
I'm
right.
thinking they're gonna skip that part of it.
Yeah. Now, you know, there may still be animals involved, but yeah, the like dogs on hind legs carrying trays, I'll be pretty surprised.
And Brianna points out that a lot of Bjorn, at least as a bear, is animated. You know, animated. It's a visual effect, mm-hmm. and so they're still probably working on that. So that's, you know, at least when he's in bear form, could be an explanation why we haven't seen a whole lot of him yet, because they're still working on him.
True. Though, as Brianna says, I mean, he's not bear all the time. I was actually kind of expecting a shot, at least with all of the glimpses we were given in that trailer. I mean, but especially the last third of that trailer before the shot with the dragon got really frantic, you know, with a whole bunch of half-second little glimpses of things. And I was kind of expecting at least one of, like, a huge, burly, axe-wielding Bjorn at some point. I mean, you know, like, firewood axe-wielding Bjorn. But anyway, we'll see. It may well be. I mean, I would have to think that Bjorn has got to be one of the things that people are really excited about the second film. I mean, I know Bjorn, especially mm-hmm. Bjorn in the Battle of Five Armies, is on my short list of like stuff I am most looking forward to seeing on film, and if they do a good job with it. The dragon, of course,
Absolutely.
Is probably number one overall in people's books, which is why Jackson has been so deliberate about how Smaug has been revealed in, you know, his treatment of him. But so, you know, maybe he's thinking in those terms, not quite sure.
Now, as far as our team is concerned, we have an even split. So Corey and I said B on this, and Laura and Dave have said A on this.
Okay. Yep. Good. I was hoping I said B. That's what I was thinking again when you – it's been so long on these that I don't 100% remember. But I was thinking B when you read them through, so I'm glad I'm still thinking the same way I was back in January.
Okay. Now, you haven't answered our conundrum, and I'm going to – Laura, you can read the conundrum. So go hit Corey with the conundrum.
All right, our conundrum was, will Bjorn be at the Battle of Dol Guldur?
No.
Now, we don't even know if the Battle of Dol Guldur is going to be in the second film.
True, which is possibly an obstacle. But should the Battle of Dol Guldur occur, I don't think it's going to happen. It's an interesting idea because there is, of course, book precedent for Gandalf encountering Bjorn and getting help from him post Gandalf separation from Bilbo and the dwarves. And when I say book precedent, I mean like manuscript precedent. I mean, that's what Gandalf does. The wizard, well, he was still Bladorthin the wizard at the time before his name had been changed to Gandalf. But when in Gandalf's, in Tolkien's first draft of chapter 8, the Flies and Spiders chapter, and you know, when they're captured by the elves, Bilbo eventually, in what becomes chapter 9, does run back and go back to Bjorn's house where the wizard is still hanging out with Bjorn and gets their help. So it's, you know, it's out there. It exists as a concept, but I don't expect it. Mostly, again, because I think they're going to meet Bjorn. I'll be a little bit surprised if what happens in the book happens in the film, that is, if Bjorn almost completely disappears for many chapters and then all of a sudden, bam, there he is in the Battle of Five Armies. Mm-hmm. It's not quite. There's one fleeting reference to him after the dragon is dead, and we hear about you know, how the birds are spreading rumors about the death of Smaug, and we hear like in one, not even a full sentence, that Bjorn has heard the news of the death of Smaug. But other than that one reference, we hear nothing whatsoever about Bjorn from the time, you know, from the end of chapter 7 through his sudden appearance in the Battle of Five Armies, which we don't even see, which we only hear about in retrospect after it's happened. That I'll be surprised if that happens quite so completely.
Yeah. I don't think they can drop him quite like that. So he's got to be doing something, but it makes me wonder if maybe the, and I admit that at Bjorn being at Dol Guldur would be kind of a stretch, but it'd be kind of cool.
Well, you
to
answered
see.
Yes.
But maybe that, I know. I'm not going to change it now, but what
actually,
if that,
and Dave did too. Dave and Laura both answered yes on this one.
What if that torture scene is actually after they leave his house? What if that's kind of, we go back to Bjorn's house and that torture scene is after the dwarves have left, so that we're not completely dropping him after the dwarves leave their house?
It's possible. Or, you know, they could be playing up, if we're going to get an on-screen torture thing, you know, if we're going to get his forceful interrogation of a goblin and a warg or whatever it is on screen, it may well be that they're just going to use that. I would say that the most likely explanation for that is the one that's similar to the book. That is, okay, mm-hmm. So he and Thorin and company start off on the wrong foot by the look of the trailer, perhaps emphatically on the wrong foot. But he has a change of heart which needs to be given screen time. So, you know, he discovers the truth, and which is probably more than just verifying their story as it is in the book. Possibly he learns something else, like maybe Azog-related, perhaps. I don't know. But anyway, then he comes back and follows them or finds them and says, okay, actually, like, I see, I misunderstood, and whatever. Like, it seems to me that it's... that's still the likeliest place where you do the torture scene. But Laura, I agree. The one other possibility would be that you make Bjorn part of the what is going on in the region outside the quest of Thorin and company story. Because that's been one of the things that was very clear in film one. With the Radagast subplot, I think people sort of can fixate on the idiosyncrasies, shall we say, of Radagast's characterization, but to lose sight of the fact that what that means, the what that established in film one was a clear focus on, we in this film are simply supposed to be interested in what is going on in Mirkwood, apart from the fact that it happens to be the setting through which, you know, the dwarves and Bilbo are going to be traveling. So it's with that in mind, it does not seem at all unlikely that Bjorn would become part of that story. And it's that story that Gandalf is entering into when he departs from the company.
Right.
So is Gandalf in, you know, whether it's the Battle of Dol Guldur or not, whether that interrogation scene is in connection with Gandalf, you know, whether Bjorn is getting information for Gandalf, I could imagine this. I'm not saying I necessarily think that's the most likely scenario, but I can certainly imagine it.
Pete said, you know, could it be just a quick shot kind of similar to Gollum in Mordor, you know, where we just see the hand and it's like this implied torture. But I do remember the actor who plays Bjorn, describing, I think this was like one of the first things that got shot, you know, of all of his scenes, was this torture scene and how kind of uncomfortable it made him feel. And I mean, he went into, I think, as much detail as he could without being, you know, tortured and killed by Jackson.
Exactly, without being subject to torture himself. Yes,
that's
exactly
right. It sounded very, you know, relatively graphic. I mean, I know it's PG-13, but still, it sounded pretty like it's going to be more than just a hand and, you know, fire in the background.
Yeah, and of course, you know, who knows what it looks like after all the editing process and everything.
Yeah. But and again, it could be the thing with the edition. In
extension,
I mean, remember we saw that scene of Gandalf at a party with little hobbits, you know, and that never made it to the first movie. So this could be the same thing.
Yep. Okay. Agreed.
Corey and I both answered no to that, and Laura and Dave both answered yes.
Excellent. Yeah,
and this is the only conundrum that Dave actually put an answer in for. So, okay. I was surprised, actually. I was like, oh my God. And when I first looked at that, I was like, oh my God, he filled them in. What a nice guy. And then I realized he'd just done the first one, but that's okay. Okay, so on to riddle number two. Riddle 2.0. No, two. This is about Thrian. So where is Thrian now in real time in the movie? And I just want to stop here and say that even though we've seen the trailer, I don't know that any – there's only one of these maybe that's been ruled out, maybe two.
Well, nothing is definitively ruled out. Nothing's definitively ruled out.
Nothing. You know, my reaction to the trailer was, and I said this to somebody online, I go, no Riddles have been harmed in the making of this trailer.
Right.
Because everything still is. So A is dead, which is the book answer. B is alive and imprisoned in Dol Guldur. I can never say that right. DG. C is alive and imprisoned elsewhere. D is alive and not a prisoner. And E, this will not be answered on screen. So you were the really feisty one on this one, Corey. I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Because you said
absolutely.
D.
Alive and not a prisoner.
Like the wise man in the forest.
And I got to tell you, all evidence is suggesting that I was right. My answer is obviously the one which fits best. If assuming that, like, Mr. Skydiving with no parachute, knife wheel dude with the questionable hair and crazy eyes is indeed Thran. And that's the if that underlies any discussion of the trailer, because we don't have proof that that is Thran. But if it is Thran, then I think that D obviously fits better with what we saw in the trailer than anything else. If he's a prisoner in Dol Guldur, it's not a real secure prison, I've got to tell you. And I don't any longer buy this, like, you know, because way back, like the beginning of last season, people, when that very first trailer came out, which had the Gandalf fighting with crazy dude in the ruins shot, which initially began the speculation that this was Thran. Anyway, back when that happened, people were like, oh, yes, there's like open air prisons in Dol Guldur, which are really awful. I'm sorry. No. Like, no open-air prison is going to involve the freedom for, like, your prisoners to be leaping out of windows and jumping around with weapons. So he is clearly not a prisoner in the trailer, and it appears from his interaction with Gandalf, both the combat interaction and the I'm being pounced on from above by crazy, falling guy.
crazy bald dude
that clearly Gandalf did not spring this guy, so he has gotten free somehow on his own, or he clearly is free. So anyway, he's obviously not in prison. So I'm not saying that B and C have been disproven. Again, nothing has been disproven because we don't even know for a fact that that's him. But
right.
If it is him, he is obviously not a prisoner, and he's obviously alive, and thus I am most likely correct.
Well, he could be like a mind prisoner. They could have his mind in prison.
That is possible, but I would still hold that I would be correct. If he were like under some kind of mental enslavement but wandering off on his own, I would still call him. I mean, would that
like
qualify as imprisoned elsewhere? I don't know.
Maybe there's like an invisible fence around Dol Guldur. You know, he can't go outside the bounds. Or
he has a collar on.
He's got the collar, yeah. Yeah, that's probably it. That's probably it. I have to say, that's an unexpectedly humane way for the necromancer to be imprisoning people. And he's basically under house arrest, you know. He's under like domestic incarceration.
Now, let me devil's advocate again, and I actually do think the scene does take place at Dol Guldur, but devil's advocate, he looks pretty darn spry. You know, yep. I mean, he's still got dark hair. His hair is not gray or anything. What if this is a flashback that actually points to the conundrum that we use? You know,
yeah.
What if this was back when they met, you know, and he sprung on Gandalf and they had a misunderstanding fight, and then he and Gandalf ends up getting the key in the map from him?
I think that's that's one thing that I was doing when I was thinking about the trailer, was I went back to the first film and was looking at the shots of Thran that we got, and that is one thing that is very clear. Howsoever bald and crazy looking he might be, that the plummeting guy in the trailer mm-hmm. is not as gray and old as Thran is in the opening sequence.
Does he have both eyes? Well, I guess he still would be missing an eye even when he gave Gandalf the map, right? Because it's Thran was missing an eye.
Yeah, he should be, yeah. He should be, if they're going to keep that. So yeah, I like that idea. I still think that he's obviously not in prison at the time Gandalf meets him, if that even if that is a flashback. But yes, it is true that if that is just a flashback and he has since died, then the correct answer would be A.
Right.
But anyway, I do think that I feel more confident than ever in my crazy answer to that riddle.
I remember in the episode we talked about this too, which was the Húrin motif that could be followed here.
Right.
You know, where Sauron has supposedly let him go, but in fact has not really done that. You know, this whole mental thing, like we were talking about, where he's let Thrain go, but in fact it's been he's still under Sauron's influence.
I love it. That would be cool. If they do
I
like a
know. Would be.
Thrain
It would be very
thing.
interesting to do that. I mean, Jackson's so he is so cagey about that, you know, about
Yep.
kind of little Silmarillion things that
It could happen. I mean, especially since, of course, because you've got the Thorin Turin thing. I mean, people overlook the fact of how
Right.
similar their names are, Thorin and Turin. Thorin and Turin's names are very similar, and they're both like the dragon stories. Now, Thorin is not like Turin, a dragon slayer, which is a huge deal. It's a big difference. And the story, Thorin's story
But
and
they
Turin's
both make
story are
some pretty
very.
bad decisions.
They do exactly. So it's anyway. I think it's to do a Thrain Húrin thing would be kind of awesome. I
It
would
would be. It
if he
would.
does that, I would love it. I'm
Yeah.
not sure it's going to happen, but I would love it.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking about how they changed Aragorn's character in the first movie was not very Tolkien-esque, really. They made him, you know, doubtful of himself. Now, the way they've sort of fleshed out Thorin in this movie is much more Tolkien-esque, especially referring back to the Silmarillion.
Yes.
You
Yes.
know, he
Yeah.
really references back to Turin and Feanor and
Dwar.
all those prideful characters that we got in the Silmarillion.
Yeah, that and that's I think that's a really good way of saying it, Laura. It's one of the things which just overall was one of the things that really gave me the impression that I had of the Hobbit film. The reason I emerged from the Hobbit film saying, I know people are going to complain about all the changes that have been made, but this film was much, nevertheless, despite all those things, much truer to the spirit of what Tolkien wrote than the Lord of the Rings film was. Because you had all that stuff, like as you say, Aragorn, doubting himself and being like, I turned away from that path long ago. And, the whole Eowyn, or not Eowyn, the whole Arwen, I am spiritually linked to Frodo in some way, which to this day I don't understand. Like all of those things, those were hugely different and totally outside, as you say, totally outside the spirit of what Tolkien was writing. Whereas so many of the things here I thought worked very well. Just the whole thing has the
Yeah.
atmosphere of, It just generally impressed me with the fact that they had really thought that through a lot better in this film. So,
Yeah.
but we should
I
go on to
agree.
the
What's
specific list.
The
The
conundrum.
conundrum. The conundrum is, did Thrain give Gandalf the key and the map before the Battle of Ezinnolbazar?
No, I don't think so. I think that's going to be part of the. There are two reasons I think no on that. First is that I think that obviously that little throwaway line of like Thrain disappeared at the Battle of Five at the Battle of Ezinnolbazar, that was given to us in the context of the Ezinnolbazar flashback was clearly like setting up a mystery which was not dealt with at all in the first film of like, well, what did happen to Thrain? I do expect that to come out at some point, and Gandalf's finding, or procuring of the key and map would I expect to be a part of that story. So that's one reason I don't think that. The other reason is that it seems to me rather illogical from Thrain's point of view. Unless Thrain has some kind of, and I seem to vaguely remember Dave espousing some sort of idea like this when we were doing this episode, that unless Thrain has some kind of like semi-prophetic foreboding prior to the Battle of Ezinnolbazar, and we get a scene with Thrain and Gandalf where Thrain's like, a foreboding is upon me, and I want you to have these because, like, I believe that, like, if you have them, then all will be well, or whatever.
Barring I think that was me. I think,
was that
I
you?
Think that, yeah, and I think that storyline is, to me, what the Dolly story is to Yana. You know, I'm kind of in love with that idea.
Yeah.
I'm in love with that story.
You know, that's a fun – I like that. And if that happens, I will completely accept it. But other than that, I can't imagine any
can't
reason
really
why Thrain would do it. I mean, if he's going to give the key to somebody, it would be to Thorin, right? But
well,
after
yeah.
the battle.
Well,
if they're on the eve of the battle and they've already been thrashed around by the dragon, so he's a little bit, you know, gun-shy, if you will, and Thorin's going to go into battle – I mean, everybody that's close to him is going to go into battle with him. You know, he'll – I would – my logic was, you know, he'd give the key and the map to somebody that's not going
to
go into battle.
Well,
and it wouldn't be necessarily the night before the battle. It might have been sometime before the battle. You know, it doesn't have to be like
– To me, the biggest riddle is why doesn't Thorin say anything when Gandalf says, your father gave me this map and key? He just drops it.
I was completely mystified by the utter lack of commentary upon that. It just kind of comes out, and everyone's like, huh, all right. Look, a map. All right, what's, okay.
Where'd you get it? Your dad gave it to me. Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. It's barely interesting,
I mean, maybe
actually.
Maybe in Bjorn's house, after they have a few glasses of mead, Thorin will say, by the way, Gandalf, kept meaning to ask you.
And maybe that's when the flashback scene will come in to tell Goldor.
It's conceivable. Could happen.
Could happen.
I know. That is one of the, you know, right. mysteries is why Thorin didn't seem to have it. With everything else that he's proud about, why wouldn't he have it? You know, that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you have it?
Right.
Well,
right.
You'd think he'd at least said, wait, is my father alive? Would that mean I wouldn't be king under the mountain?
Yeah, yeah. No. Not curious about whether or not Dad is still alive.
Of course, in the book, it's the funny part is that Gandalf's been carrying around for 99 years, right?
Right,
and
right.
Just
yes.
remember.
Exactly. And although he says, you know, he had no idea who it was, so you know,
right,
even in the published book, he says that. But but yeah, no, it is though. And again, even in the published book, Thorin gets a little bit snippy about it. You know, when Gandalf rises to it, you know, when he asks how Gandalf came by it, and Gandalf's like, I did not come by it. I was given it. Right. He's kind of defensive about the whole thing.
Right.
So that exchange is there in the book, and the way that it was downplayed, I do wonder, I'm not sure how to pronounce Ives, Eves?
Eve.
Eve.
If
Eve is saying, There could well be more of that in the extended edition. I mean, it may well be something that was just cut for the.
Oh, you mean in the first
cinematic.
Film? Yeah,
yeah.
The first film.
So that perhaps it was
yeah,
you know.
Pete says Jackson may have just assumed that, you know, the unwashed masses wouldn't have really cared nor even noticed that.
Which
know,
is
the,
why
the missing reaction.
Right, which is why he might have cut it have it be there, but decide at the end of the day that could be something that could wait for the extended edition.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
All right, moving on to 03. Oops, I went too far. Here we go. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, great. I love these questions. These are good questions. How will it, as like I said, no riddle was harmed in the making of the trailer. How will the elves' relationship with the encroaching evil in Mirkwood be depicted? A, the forest is uniformly dark with no light-dark boundary, but elves are living at peace, which is the book answer. B, the forest is uniformly dark with no boundary, and the elves are living in crisis. C, meaning armor and, you know, knives and bows and sliding around. C, there is a clear and unchallenged evil elf realm demarcation and the elves are living in peace. The Doriath answer. D, there is an actively defended boundary between the encroaching evil and the elf realm, i.e. the elves are in crisis, or E, none of the above.
What did I say?
I mean, I think,
one?
You know, I mean, my impression is, what you said was, which one is this, four? This is four? You said A.
This is three.
You said D. You and I said D.
Yeah, everybody said D.
And Laura said D.
But Dave.
Dave said C.
All right. Okay. Because I think, actually, I Well, we'll have to see. We can't say definitively, but I think there is pretty clear evidence in the trailer that the answer is C or D and not A or B. Because in the area that they are going through in the elf territory, where, basically the woodland background behind Toriel almost every time we see her is definitely not the like dark, twisted, spider infested Mirkwood view. And in particular, I'm thinking of that scene that I find so funny with the pointing elf, right? Who's pointing the path right out, what looks like right outside their door. The like go straight ahead and you can't miss it scene. That bit
Legolas, of all
to
people, right?
Legolas. Yes,
Good for
exactly. That's
you.
what makes it so funny. Anyway, the bit. The thing is that scene is clearly like it's nice, pretty bucolic elf woods that they're going out into. It is definitely not twisted, dark, hideous Mirkwood stuff. So I would expect now
Now, the
are we going to
fact
get a
that Legolas is
demarcation?
wearing armor, and I think the pointing elf is wearing armor too, sort of leads me to think that D is probably the answer. And also the fact that, when Legolas does his slide and says, "Don't think I will not kill you," that still doesn't mean he was necessarily looking for the dwarves. I mean, the pointing guy, I said this to somebody on the site today. I said the pointing guy may be pointing because their radar showed unusual spider activity. And he's pointing to, where they got the spider activity, and Legolas is going, and then he happens to run into the dwarves.
Exactly. That invites a charming idea of some kind of like, spider app, on their iPhones that they can
Or little
use.
antennas, little saucers, antenna saucers that come up and they revolve
Something
and then they
like
come back
that,
down
yeah.
again.
Exactly. Talk about in the spirit of Tolkien. Yeah, that's
Or maybe the
Oh
butterflies
yeah,
and
absolutely.
messengers.
The
Oh,
butterflies.
there you go.
Well, I mean,
Butterflies
yeah,
and
look at
messengers,
all
yeah.
that
If we're
potential like eagle
That's right.
summoning troops that Bilbo is surrounded by on the tree.
So it indicate that D seems to be the right answer, but even so, I think this riddle is still open for.
No, I think there's clearly evidence in support of D. The fact that they have armor and weapons, by the way, doesn't to me absolutely exclude A or C. It's okay
That's
for
right. I
them.
mean, even in Doriath, they had armor and weapons.
Exactly, and went out to patrol the boundaries and things. But yeah, no, like basically the in crisis thing really means like, do we get the sense that the elves feel like their land is a land under siege, that the spiders and the evil corruption of the forest is encroaching upon and they're trying to hold it at bay or whatever? Or is it just like, what are other parts of the forest dark? Well, whatever, yes, that's outside our realm and it's awful. But anyway, I mean, which actually is seems to be, in fact, the situation in the book, because the elves know perfectly, it's not like they don't know about the spiders and don't know about the evil corruption of Mirkwood and aren't happy when it's gone, but at the same time, they're not like in crisis and needing to do something about it and under pressure. So anyway, so yeah, that's why A is the book answer. But
So, Laura, hit us with the conundrum.
the
This one took us a
conundrum.
while to talk about and digest.
Will a deer or hart or elk, etc., show up in Mirkwood as the dwarves cross the river? Now, it could be a white or a black deer, just to make that clear,
We wanted
because
to be
it's
very specific
actually
about we didn't get into color or anything like
irrespective
that.
of color.
It's a black deer that jumps across, but it's a white deer that they see later on, I believe.
Yes. Now, no, but I
So
think
our
I'm.
conversation in the digest about this was about would this is just the perfect kind of little throwaway that Jackson would give to the fans, you know what I mean? And also could be what causes Bomber to fall in the water.
I'm going to say no, but I think there might be a moose. Just kidding. Oh, I just said that to annoy
It
Trey.
could be a moose. Anything with hoof and four legs.
That's under et
Yeah,
cetera means
just under et
moose, et
cetera.
cetera.
Okay. Any deer or closely related species? Right.
Ungulate, yes, an
Okay.
ungulate, yes. Doesn't even have to have antlers.
A cow.
Okay. Okay,
a cow.
It's like a compromise, you know, a white cow. I'm sure the fans would like that just as well. I have to tell you, I am, you know, Trish, you're talking about being in love with the idea of, like, you know, Thrain's foreboding, and I am in love with the idea of a, like, Hobbit Aeneid crossover where Thranduil's elk gets shot by Thorin in, like, a tragic misunderstanding.
That's right. You talked about that.
Yeah.
And just to remind people who might not be immediately familiar with the Aeneid, it's the thing that starts the war at the end of the Aeneid. So that, you know, Aeneas and his son Ascanius and the Trojans have landed in Italy, and they're having peace talks with the local Italians. It looks like everything's going to work out fine. But of course, Juno, who is trying to prevent and destroy the Trojans, won't let everything work out just fine. And so she arranges for things to go sour in various ways. But the thing, the event which actually leads to the beginning of bloodshed between the Romans or the Trojans and the Italians is this deer. Like, this Italian family have a pet deer. And it's, like, off minding its own business, doing its, like, gentle domestic thing. And Ascanius, Aeneas's son, and some of his warriors come upon it and shoot it, or, you know, they injure it, and it, like, returns wounded, to its family, you know, to the humans who house it, and, like, it dies right there. And then, like, the hunters come and they respond, and pretty soon battle breaks out. It's a really poignant moment in the Aeneid, and, you know, that I find that parallel just delightful. And I don't remember who it was that initially suggested that the deer shot at the river could be Thranduil's elk. So much was made of Thranduil's elk after the first film that it came up pretty quickly. But anyway, I love the idea. Love it.
That
you know,
great.
If like when they meet Thranduil, you know, he's like, "And you shot my elk." You know, like, oh man,
you shot my Bobo.
It would be great. It would be fantastic.
Well, and you know, you think about it, because I mean, if they play up the, you know, they're starving and they're in the forest, if they play up that aspect of,
yeah, exactly. Of, no, I mean, it could totally work. It absolutely could work.
Do that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not necessarily predicting that will happen. But anyway, yes, I think my answer to the conundrum is yes. I do think that some kind of deer-ish thing.
Hooved
animal that is probably not a cow will show up at the river and be shot. I think that that will happen.
So we're almost unanimous on that.
I think everybody.
If Dave feels, he can be really contrary. Just
Dave
contrary
will probably
sometimes.
Say
so
no. Yeah, just because everyone else is saying yes.
Just because he's Dave.
But he'll have a really good reason. He always has a great reason.
That's true. Okay, so let's see. Back to the riddles. Let's go on to 04 here. Under what circumstances will the dwarves be captured by the wood elves? A, elves are sent out to capture the dwarves and do so after they are freed from the spider webs case. Spider web casings. Book answer. B, elves are sent out to capture the dwarves, but they have to rescue them from the spider web casings to do so. C, elves encounter the dwarves by chance or seek them benevolently after they are freed from the spider webs. D, elves encounter the dwarves by chance or seek them benevolently and rescue them from the spider casings. Or E, none of the above.
What did I say?
You said A, and I said C.
I think almost everyone.
And Laura said A. Everybody said A except me. I said C.
Okay.
And I actually do still think that that holds. Yeah, I think C is still definitely in the running.
Oh, I
because again, I'm thinking that Legolas literally happens upon them, but it's after they've been freed from the spider webs.
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, I do think B and D are looking real unlikely based on the trailer.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
In spite of the Lego toy.
In spite Toriel of the Lego toy.
And Legolas and the spiders.
Right. Which, you know, like, let that be an instructional moment for us, you know, in what kind of interpretive conclusions we come to based on Lego toys in the future.
But Lego toys, that's right.
The elves could still be still help rescue them from the spiders only after they're out of their casings.
Right.
That's why it's written so specifically.
Yep.
That's why it's written so specifically. This is specifically about freeing them from the casings, not fighting the spiders afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. That's easily imaginable. I mean, of course, in the book, they've already eluded the spiders. The spiders have given up and gone home, and then the elves find them. Idea that they would still be in flight from the spiders and the elves come in at the tail end and, attack the spiders, and that's what makes the spiders retreat. That seems to me not even a major shift from the book, really, just a compression.
Right.
And
both
actually,
a compression and an addition of more action. So,
in the book, I believe it's when they wander into an area where the elves had been, one of their feasting areas, that the spiders give up and go away.
Right. Yes. Exactly. So as you say, even in the book, there is a sense that it is, in fact, indirectly the elves which assist in their escape. You know, they would not have escaped had it not been for the magic of the elves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So are we basically thinking then that Bilbo's still going to have a hero moment here? That the the freeing of the dwarves will be very much still his.
I think so. I mean, and it's.
I hope so.
Even in the arc that they've given to Bilbo, and we talked about this a lot in the reaction to film one stage of things, about how Bilbo's hero time frame has seemed to be stepped up in the film compared to the book, and how they have made, the Azog fight in the Out of the Frying Pan into the Fire scene more spider-like heroism on Bilbo's part. However, there is still a difference that they could make this as sort of part of Bilbo's continuing to develop character arc. Because there's a difference between I am here and I see that my friend is in danger and I'm going to impulsively go and do something crazy and attack this orc to save his life, which is what he does at the end of film one. And it's a significant moment. But there's a big difference between that and I am sitting here safe and under no threat. I know that my friends are off in an impossible position, which it seems almost ludicrous for me to go and attempt to rescue them from single-handedly, but I am going to go and do that anyway. And that's the position he's in with the spiders.
And plus, he doesn't actually save anybody in that Azog encounter.
Right. Well,
he sort of delays things.
Yeah. I mean, he does it looks like Thorin is going to be killed. But yeah, I agree. It's not like he comes in and turns the tide of battle
Whereas with the spiders, he does turn the tide. He does actually.
Presumably, no eagles will be involved. Moths, possibly, but eagles, probably not in the spider scene. So, yes. Yeah.
I sure hope not.
But eagles? Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. This is 04 now, right? So everybody did, except for me, I did C. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
That's the right one. All right.
Okay,
all right.
So
all right.
Born?
So Laura,
the conundrum.
Oh, this conundrum actually got a lot of conversation around it.
Sure did.
After we
sure
closed
did.
It.
Will the word Attercop or Tom Noddy be used by Bilbo in the spider fight in Mirkwood? And just to be clear, it could be Attercop and Tom Noddy as well.
Right.
Laura argued for and, other. And I'm like, no, let's make it or.
Yeah.
Well, if you say Attercop, you might as well say Tom Noddy.
You know, I'm not sure I agree about that. I'm going to say yes. And more, and what's more, I will hazard a further, more specific prediction. I predict Attercop, but no Tom Noddy. That's what I predict.
Oh.
And here's the reason I predict.
Why is that?
Okay. It is because I think that Bilbo is going to. I think that there is going to be a moment where he is like yelling to distract them, and I think he's going to call them Attercop at that point. I don't think he's going to sing a song. And I doubt he's going that I don't see Martin Freeman standing there yelling Tom Noddy at them, but I could imagine Attercup, especially. So anyway, and because to me, Tom Noddy feels, I mean, the line between them is fairly fine, but I think it does exist. That where Tom Noddy falls just on the tra-la-la-lolly side, I think, of the silliness line that Peter Jackson has been sort of unwilling to cross. So I think we're going to get Attercup, but no Tom Noddy. But yes, I am certainly hoping for at least one of the two. I will applaud if we get them both.
I don't know. I can see Bilbo standing there taunting them kind of sing-song and saying Attercop and Tom Noddy, and you know, that
possibly
would be so cool. I'm going to cheer. You guys are going to hear me cheer
Absolutely.
If they say both.
Absolutely.
Only this is why we need to see the movie just among ourselves.
Yeah,
so when we stand
exactly
up and cheer,
it's just one of the whole points of this moot is that, you know, we can do these kinds of things without annoying the general public.
That's right.
Yeah. Or like confirming.
Oh, that's right. Pete reminds me about Lazy Love and Crazy Cub too. He could go down the Lazy Love Crazy Cub route too.
I would be surprised.
That I don't see that.
No. Well, the thing is, people don't know what cob means. I mean, cob means certainly to Americans, cob means nothing but having to do with corn. Most people don't have any idea that cob just means spider, which is why it calls him Crazy Cob. That's, of course, where the word cobweb comes from, though most people don't know that. Cop, of course, is the same word as cob. Attercop is just the Anglo-Saxon word for a poisonous spider. Cob is the word for spider, and attercob is, you know, that's the same adder is the same thing as the modern word for snake. That's the, you know, like the poison snake spider is like a painfully literal rendering of Attercup.
Well, I really want to hear Bilbo say old Tom Noddy, all big body.
Yeah. Yeah. I always loved that line. Old Tom Noddy, all big body. Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it. I really don't see it, but hey, you know, we'll see.
I think the title for this will need to be, if you're going to say Attercop, you might as well say Tom Noddy.
That's right.
I do want to point out to our listeners, both live on here and people that are listening to this as a podcast, have you noticed how much extra education you get on Riddles in the Dark? We may not be on iTunes University, but so far we've had a classic lesson and a little old English lesson.
That's what happens when you talk about Tolkien. I mean, it's hard to avoid.
That's true. It is true, true, true. Okay, so let's move on to Riddle 2.05. How is the escape by Beryl arranged? So our choices are A, by Bilbo alone and unaided, which is the book answer. B, in cooperation with at least one dwarvish collaborator. C, with the knowing consent or assistance of at least one elven sympathizer. D, with the help of magical intervention from some outside, i.e. non-ring source, such as Gandalf, Radagast, Galadriel, or similar, which is the second phase manuscript plots notes A answer. And E is none of the above. And I remember we talked about this, which is these go like D takes priority over C, which takes priority over B. So in other words, if there's a dwarf and an elven and a sympathizer, the answer is C.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, okay. Because they are in sort of the order of increasing unlikeliness. So,
unlikeliness,
so,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. 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 Okay, good. Good. So let's see. So, trying to think. I know that I stood alone
B
on this one.
I said
you
B.
Were B. Right. You are dwarvish collaborator.
Dwarvish collaborator, yep.
Trish. Okay. Oh, I am. I'm B. Yeah, I'm the dwarvish collaborator.
Tori and I are A, and Dave is C.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking C is looking pretty unlikely from the trailer, given the elf pursuit of the barrels. You know, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
There could be a rogue elf sympathizer. But, and you know, Toriel has rogue elf sympathizer written all over her in that trailer, one has to admit. But anyway,
but not to the extent of helping them get out. We do have that one thing where she's looking through the bars at the hot elf.
A hot dwarf.
Hot dwarf. Sorry, hot dwarf.
Hot dwarf. Yeah, possibly.
That was it was your thought bubble, Corey, when we talked about it was, oh, that's that guy's
is that a hot dwarf.
Yes. Right. Possible. Quite possible.
But probably not.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how, you know, I mean, we did seem to learn a bit more. I mean, we do know more about the barrel escape. It does seem like they're just going to be cut loose instead of being, you know, that they're clearly not going to stow away unbeknownst to the elves.
Right.
You know, we're not going to get they're shut up in barrels and the elves don't even realize that there are dwarves and the barrels are rolling down. That's clearly not going to happen because the barrels are open and they just escape into the open water and then the elves pursue them. So this we know, but that doesn't actually answer this question at all. It doesn't get us any further.
Well, you know, the other thing, that's true, you're right, because now that we're seeing the elves pursue them, what could happen is that somehow or another Bilbo springs them in the dungeons with no real clear plan, and the elves are actually chasing them before they ever actually leave the Elven Kingdom, and then Bilbo's like, quick, come in here, okay, get in there, get in the, you know, like the plan sort of surfaces in the moment, as opposed to it being planned ahead of time.
Right. Or they could be, you know, just about to be discovered or something, you know, like somebody could have just discovered their empty cells and be like, I don't know. Yeah. But it's, but yeah, I, as far as the actual mechanism of who plans it and how it happens, I think we learn very little more. So,
With the barrels open, that does sort of lead to not very well thought out plan either.
Yeah, it does suggest that. Yes, I agree.
So maybe it is a spur of the moment thing. They've gotten out of their cells and they're just running and jumping the barrels.
Yep.
Yeah. Don't have time to put lids on.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So, So I think I was the odd man out on this one. Everybody else, I think, answered. Dave said C. That's right. He said C.
Yeah.
That's right. Which we've decided is the least likely at this point. Well, besides D.
I think so. Completely unlikely. But you know, again, it could still be. It's definitely not ruled out.
Yeah.
And then, now, with this conundrum, I actually want to bring up some more Tauriel stuff, but let's talk about this conundrum first, and then I want to have a little Tauriel moment with you guys.
All right, the conundrum.
Go ahead.
Will Tauriel have feelings for Legolas, whether reciprocated or not? And I want to bring up that Scott Holbrook Fells vehemently opposed this conundrum. He didn't think just because there's a woman in a movie, you don't have to be having her, you know, be everybody's romantic interest, and that's true, but it is Hollywood, so.
Yeah.
But I already brought this up to Corey and Dave, and that's what they basically said. It's
very
Hollywood.
Theoretically Hollywood, true, but it's,
they're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not really possible.
You can tell with a conundrum like this, Corey, that you have two females doing the digest.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I think that the phrasing of this conundrum is really admirable, because to say whether or not she like has a relationship with him of some kind or whatever would be one thing, but to just say whether she has feelings for him, that's different.
We're kind of leaving that open for
And we didn't even say what kind of feelings. Maybe she doesn't like him. Maybe she hates him.
Maybe it's negative feelings.
Well, the way that look she gives him in the trailer, you know, she's not thinking hot elf. That's right.
Yeah.
Dave also brought up the fact that that his wife has given him that look in the past. So, you know.
Right. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Doesn't prove anything. Well, yeah.
Not during the wedding.
So, what do you think, Corey? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I said. I think
I'm trying to remember what I said. Did you say no?
No.
I can't remember. I think I said no too.
Yeah, I said no.
I suspect that they're gonna go now in the
actually,
episode.
Oh, actually, Corey didn't answer.
Yeah. So now I'm gonna say no because I think that this is more of a hope than a prediction, really. But I kind of hope that they're going to go contrary to sort of stereotyped expectation.
Yeah.
I mean, and we talked about this a bit in the episode on this. You know, that if if they do romance between Toriel and Legolas, it would just be, it's so obvious.
Tropey.
Yeah. It's just like the easiest possible thing to do. And of course, it's not that they can't do it well. And it's not that they can't do some interesting things with it. And I am very much opposed to the idea that in order for anything to be good, it has to be like new and unexpected and totally different from everything that anybody ever thought. Something which is highly anticipated, perfectly logical, and totally expected can be done really well and can be really, really powerful. But I kind of hope they don't do it.
Yeah, me too.
For exactly the reasons, actually, you know, that Scott was kind of pointing to. It's so their decision to add a female character, I've always said, is within the framework of what they're doing, namely a Hollywood film, perfectly defensible. If they're going to add characters, and why not add elf characters? We get almost no elven characters in the Hobbit book. So it makes sense, actually, to add at least one elf character. And if you're going to add a character, why not have it be a woman, since you've got all men otherwise in the book? So I think that the decision I've always felt that the decision to do it is defensible. But if you're just going to add a female character and all you do with her is make her Legolas's girlfriend, that's lame. I mean, I can't help but think that that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. I think everybody agreed. Everyone said no. I think everyone's hoping that this is no.
Yeah.
And after seeing the trailer, I think it probably is going to be no. They didn't seem like the relationship was anything other than just friendly.
Yeah.
It's, or brother and sister at the most.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That I can easily what it seems like. See them have like a sibling-ish kind of.
And she even says that in the interview, Evangeline Lilly said that apparently her background is that I guess she was almost like a foster daughter to Thranduil, you know, that she grew up with Legolas. I mean, that's kind of she doesn't say foster daughter, but that's kind of the implication that I read into it, you know, so they've grown up basically as brother and sister, which, you know, also obviously explains the look.
right, exactly.
Now, let me have my Tauriel moment here. So actually, it's not just, there's a small thing and a larger thing. Let me do the small thing first. This just occurred to me today when Empire Magazine has come out with its first Desolation of Smaug magazine cover. Uh-huh. And it is Tauriel, Legolas of the Weird Blue Eyes, and Thranduil. You know, and actually, I think Tauriel is actually, it's the shot of her with that funny look on her face. I was noticing the fact that Tauriel's hair is well past her waist. And I just was thinking she's this warrior elf. I mean, isn't that a good handhold for an orc?
Well, yeah, like, very long hair.
She goes into battle with her hair down.
Yeah, with your hair down.
Yeah.
Anyway. Very impressive.
So I think her hair is down when they're fighting, aren't they?
So did the Scotsman, though, and it.
Yeah, you're right.
Furious.
Does it like the Romans, I guess.
I suppose. I just thought, you know, that's a really long, you know, like somebody could take, you know, pick that up and just like Azog could just pick that up and just like whip her over his head, you know, in circles because it's so long. Anyway, that's a small thing. But
well,
the bigger thing is actually something.
Romans, but, you know, I can say.
Was it? Yeah. See?
That's why
look how long they were
legionnaires
around.
Always had to cut their hair short and shave.
Really
Romans
short.
Invented shaving, and this is one of the reasons why you don't want somebody grabbing you by the beard during combat. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go. And probably that short hair is why the military guys have buzz cut.
Right.
Well, since she's an archer, maybe nobody ever gets close enough to do that. So.
Yeah. Or maybe elves just have some. Maybe their hair is like Teflon, and you can't just be. You know, you just can't get a handhold. I don't know. You know, elves are different. You know, different. Now, the larger thing, which has been brought up by a couple of people today, and I said, wait, because I'll bring this up when we get to Tauriel, because Tauriel is, as we've seen in the trailer, and, you know, and in the reaction to the reaction video, and in, you know, everything else, she's a real kick-ass warrior elf. And we see her in the scene in the, not in the trailer, but in the sneak preview footage, she's interrogating an orc. We certainly do, and I think we may have talked about this in an episode, there certainly seems to be this thematic thing of torture in this particular movie. I mean, so far anyway, with Bjorn and Tauriel, and we'll be getting to Bolg in a second. Doesn't it seem like there's a lot of torture motif.
You know, I wonder if there, I'm thinking of the way in which the parallel, or at least the potential parallel, between Thorin and Azog with the whole, you know, circle of vengeance thing. The first film did suggest this kind of parallel between Thorin's drive for vengeance and Azog's drive for vengeance, sort of kind of not exactly blurring the lines between the good guys and the bad guys in the sense of you're not really sure who is who, but rather just to kind of suggest that the gulf between that, like the motivations that drive the good guys and the motivations that drive the bad guys, are not totally different. And I wonder if they're going to be kind of blurring those a little bit more as time, because, you know, this is one of the things, and when I say this, one of the things that I'm thinking of, this is, of course, one of the classic criticisms of Tolkien, which I find really ignorant and based on really, really poor readings of Tolkien. But it's basically the criticism that in Tolkien, everything is so black and white. There are no shades of gray. Like there's, you know, it's like everyone is 100% good or 100% evil. And that's all that happens in Tolkien's books. And that's a ridiculous thing to say about Tolkien. If you actually read Tolkien carefully, Tolkien is remarkably good at depicting, you know, the temptations of the good and, you know, and like what leads evil people to become evil people and all these things. But nevertheless, Peter Jackson, I wonder if those kinds of things, because I'm sure that they have heard lots of those kinds of things about the Lord of the Rings films in the previous 10 years. So I'm wondering if one of the things that they're going to be doing sort of thematically over the course of this, which would work actually pretty well, especially when Thorin goes off the deep end and starts acting like a crazy man. And one could easily say, like, you know, how different is Thorin from Azog, you know, when he's on the wall that he constructs at the beginning, you know, in the Gates of Erebor or whatever. I can easily see them kind of going in that direction. So perhaps that's one of the reasons why we're getting like the torture stuff to sort of
a little moral ambiguity. In
exactly.
There.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, that could easily be done very clumsily, I think, but I wonder if that's kind of what they're doing.
Oh, you put the Empire. Oh, you're so smart. You put the graphic up there.
Oh yeah. I found it. That's the one you were talking about, right?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, her hair is very...
Yeah, look at that. I mean, isn't that a handhold? Look at that handhold.
Yeah, very much. Now, I don't remember seeing that trailing out behind her like a kite when she's doing her,
no,
like, 50-foot leap in the trailer moment. So she clearly ties it back when actually in combat. But
I remember that Legolas has a really cool braid that I'd love to figure out how to do. In the pointing guy scene, I was like, oh, cool braid. I like that.
I missed that. I'll have to go back and look at his braid.
Oh, you missed it? Oh, yeah. Well, so I, you know, I mean, I have the hair for it. So it's like, you know, finding ways to braid my hair back. Okay. Well, anyway, so I just kind of wanted to bring that up because a couple of people had said, you know, we talked about Bjorn earlier, and of course, Bolg is supposed to be, he's in the movie at all. He's supposed to be a torturer. So it just seemed like, you know, we got a lot of torture going on here.
Yep. Yeah.
But we will revisit this a little bit more later when we get to Bolg. But in the meantime, Riddle 2.06, we are now getting into Bardland. No holds barred, as Laura named our digest about this. What is she's, you know, I've got a whole new bar I have to, like, now. Yeah, you know, she's challenging me on titles now, Laura is. So we've got this sort of, you know, I'm in competition. There's a competition going on now to figure out the best title.
Okay.
And I also, by the way, now know who must have named them Silmarillion episodes. Because I have that.
We tended to vote on those, though Laura did have, like, final say most of the time.
The best.
I named some of them, but but a lot of those were group effort.
Yeah, that was actually, like, by the time when we were actually recording those live, there was like a chat window that was going on among the participants during
the
session.
Oh, so they were, yeah.
And they would spend like the whole last half of the episode discussing amongst themselves what the episode was going to be named while I was still trying to do discussion.
There's another good reason not to have a live chat during your courses.
Exactly, right? Yes. Yes, exactly.
God. Okay. Well, riddle 2.06, what is Bard's relationship with the company going to be when they are in Lake Town? A, he has no presence or only a cameo role, which is the closest to the book answer. B, he supports them openly. C, he supports them but secretly. D, he openly opposes them. Or E, he works against them secretly. What did we say? Let's see, this is 06, right?
I said D. I remember that.
You said D? Yeah, you did. That's right.
He openly opposes them. You know, and in the trailer, he pretty much openly opposes them.
But I say be careful because we got tricked by a couple of things in the trailers last year, too. I remember the whole Took Baggins thing, kind of. It looked one way in the trailer, but it was actually another way.
Yeah.
And
the statement that he makes about, like, you know, that you'll bring destruction down on us all, that could just be, you know, a warning or a caution. It doesn't have to be like, and I think you're awful and I oppose what you do and I think you shouldn't go. It's not that to me, but I certainly agree, Laura. It's not a slam dunk. But it's,
right, could be an initial reaction. Yeah,
it's certainly strong evidence that
that answer is it is in the running. That answer,
very much.
Certainly, yeah. Now I said C, which was he supports them but secretly. And Dave and I both said that. But Corey, I think you said B, didn't you?
B, he supports them.
I keep having to flip back and forth. Yeah. No. Yeah, you said B.
Yeah.
Your answer was B. Dave and I both said C.
Yep, that sounds right. And as I recall, my argument was, and I still believe in it, that there needs to be two different, that he's going to be the spokesperson for the non-Master of Lake Town sentiment in the town, and that he's going to be it. So, yep. Now, of course, it's possible the fact that he is the voice for that doesn't necessarily mean to be the public voice for that. He could still support them secretly, and we, the audience, could hear him as the spokesperson for that kind of sentiment in Lake Town. But still, I'm going to stick with B. We'll see.
I agree,
Laura is definitely the leading candidate.
In the running.
Yeah.
I just feel like Bard
could be.
I just feel like Bard is the voice of doom. You know, he's like, you guys are going to bring disaster. You know, because and in the Hobbit book, that's kind of how he comes in.
Yeah, the grim-voiced man, exactly.
The first time we see him, he's saying, you know, you fools, you know, this is not gold running down from the mountain. This is disaster coming on us.
And then in defense of mine, you know, the fact that we do see them leaving openly, you know, in a boat, in other words, that this town people are seeing them off, you know, when they take their boat to the mountain, still doesn't preclude the fact that he could be supporting them secretly. In other words, you know, we don't necessarily see him on the wharf saying, goodbye, I support you openly.
Right.
So, I mean, I agree. I think Laura's choice is definitely the lead right now, but I think it's still open season. And as somebody asked me what happens if there's a change of heart in the middle, I said, that'll be for the judges to make the call. Then.
Absolutely.
Well, no, I don't think anybody agreed with me, so. But, we'll see. Yeah,
Miss Laura.
The trailer may change people's mind, but exactly. Anyway, that's so right. The conundrum.
This is the one you meant where people can come back and change it to be more with you on this one. At the beginning of the show,
yeah,
you
of course.
Said that.
Yeah. They realize that I'm right. So anyway, the conundrum. Will Bard have a personal grudge against the Master of Lake Town? For instance, he cheated him out of his inheritance. So, something.
So, Corey, the idea here is that it's personal as opposed to simply being opposed to sort of like the government.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I am the champion of the people. Rather, it's something really personal.
I love it.
And Trish, you said no, and I said yes.
Yeah, I love it.
There you go.
I say yes because I hope it's true. I would.
That's a lot
especially since, you know, given the amount of time that they're going to have to dip, it's not going to spend the whole movie in Lake Town, you know? So we're not going to be able to build a gradual sense of what, if the Master of Lake Town, in fact, runs an exploitative, you know, bad government, which I rather expect, if that's true, we're not going to be able to get a general sense of like, ah, but the people of Lake Town are being oppressed in various ways. But if we can hear a bard's personal grievance, that would be a much more concise way to capture the the master of Lake Town is not doing right by his people concept in a way which will be very effective for the story. So yeah, I love it. I say yes.
You know, Master of Lake Town, that's another one we haven't seen in the trailer. I mean, we've got Bjorn, the Master, and Bolg, which is, we're coming right up on Bolg right now, if he's even in the movie. You know, so far we have not seen them, so we may be getting some interesting trailers coming down the line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great segue to Riddle 2.07.
I was going to say, I could definitely see a Lake Town-centric trailer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Trailer. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, 207. What will Bolg's role be in The Hobbit Desolation of Smaug? A, he is commander-in-chief of the orc armies, which is the book answer. B, his activity is limited only to Dol Guldur. C, he leads away missions with red shirts, right? D, he has no defined role. Or E, none of the above. We have a lot of none of the aboves. So there was a fair amount of conversation about this on the site, you know, when we put it up. And the commander-in-chief of the Orc Army, remember, we're talking about the second movie. We're not talking about Battle of Farm Arbys. We're not talking about the third movie. We're talking about the answer A is he's the commander-in-chief of the Orc Armies, and there's no war yet. You know, there's no Battle of Five Armies yet. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So his activity is broad. Dol Guldur may be his headquarters, but he's in charge of, you know, the orc armies all over the place. Whereas in B, he's only active in Dol Guldur.
Yeah, he's got to be. If he were to be, I mean, A is still perfectly plausible. Yes, we're not going to see him leaving troops in battle, but he'd have to be preparing.
Right.
Again, for book answer, in the book, the orcs are starting to prepare for battle. You know, the goblins are starting to muster right after Thorin and them escape. Like, that's the thing that pushes the goblins over the edge. They're already gathering, and then they hear that the dragon is dead, and they're like, hey, it's super bonus time. Let's go claim the gold also. So basically, this means there is, in fact, a book answer for what is Bolg doing during the time frame that is the second movie, and that is mustering the goblins. So we could, and especially when you add then into that the necromancer plot, then it makes that even more plausible, because then we can get some more also on the coordination between the goblins and the necromancer, which seems almost inescapable, and that would give us another reason to see the goblin commander involved. So
except I think you did say B, Corey.
I did.
We all said B. Yeah.
I said A. I said A.
Okay.
I did.
That's good.
I did say A. Because
you just defended Laura's position. That's
right. That's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Just,
well, and so did Mark Fisher. Mark Fisher gave the book answer also.
That's good. That's good. Getting back to his roots there. Yeah. That's good.
Well, what I was thinking is, you know, maybe we'll have a little dynamic with Azog and Bolg, where Azog, the father, is the one who kind of went nuts and became an outcast and a rebel, and his son is the one who's risen to power and taken over for him. So that's what I kind of thought.
Azog's like a renegade.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Now Azog is still off on his mad quest, and here's Bolg being like, you know, here I am, like minding the shop all by myself, you know, trying to be, you know, some kind of a sane leader of our people, and there's Dad out doing his wild-eyed crazy thing on his own.
Exactly.
I remember saying in the digest, we talked about the torture motif. Now there's a major father-son motif going on in this trilogy between Thorin and Thrain, Legolas and Thranduil, and Azog and Bolg. We have the potential for some serious father-son stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Like, Denethor
and then we'll find out that Bard is the illegitimate child of the Master of Lake Town.
Well, and there's Bilbo and Frodo, who really have a father-son relationship.
Yeah, there's a father-son sort of relationship there, too. So, Oh, my. Okay, so we all answered B, and Laura answered A. And now, Laura, lay that conundrum on us.
I will. The conundrum is Bolg undead? Because we did see him get or what we think is Bolg, at least get wounded in the Battle of Azanulthasar.
I think
he sure did look like he got taken down by Dwalin.
It did. Now, you know, we never saw the body. You know, we didn't take his vitals. We just saw him fall, which is not the same thing. But, you know.
Well, what I was thinking, if Bolg is not dead, why isn't Bolg going after Dwalin? You know, I mean, Azog, yeah, he got a little bit, you know, he got his arm taken off, but, you know.
Right.
Bolg seemed like he got hurt pretty bad.
Maybe,
he's not going after Dwalin.
Maybe being undead gives you a better sense of perspective on all of this. You know, like, you've got the time for, like, anger management classes, and you can be
That's
like,
right.
Look, Dad, you have
you can
really
talk
lost
to the
perspective
Nazgul.
On all of this. You know, I mean, seriously.
I've seen the
Our life
light
is
I've
too
come
short.
Back.
There are only, you know, as it is, our time is too short for the number of people we want to torture and harass. So why waste it, like, you know, dedicating yourself to useless vengeance on one person? So, yeah, no, absolutely. I think.
Now, we don't actually have this up yet on
no,
the grid.
No, we don't, do we? Oh, no, because I haven't.
Because I don't think the episode's out yet. Yeah.
Episode,
but
no,
I think
I'm
we divided on
today.
This, didn't we?
I think we divided on this, Lord, didn't we? I said no. I don't think Bolg is undead.
Oh, okay. I think I said no, too.
Yeah, I think we both said no, because it would be a little silly. But
here
we
I
had
sure
so many
divided.
So many fans
yeah.
who were just
well, the Zomborg
running with
idea.
The Bolg yeah, undead thing.
This is the Zomborg conundrum, yes.
Yeah. Here I am sharply divided between my heart and my head here. My head says no, but my heart says yes. I will get to say the word Zomborg so many more times if he turns out to be undead. In fact, I would be willing to bet that, like, I could say the word Zomborg, like, in print somewhere. You know, like, I could actually say it. Like, I might even be able to try to manipulate some kind of, like, unsuspecting mainstream journalist into writing the word Zomborg in an article.
That's right.
He turns out to
be
undead.
Awesome.
And the possibilities of this are just too delightful to turn
really
away
cool.
from. So
actually, you know, you could even do it ahead of time if you get interviewed ahead of the movie coming out.
It's true.
And speculating about Bull.
It's
that's
true,
right.
yeah.
That's
if I'm
right.
asked, I will make sure to mention the word Zomborg. But the other thing, the one piece of, like, the one way in which my head is willing to concede to my heart on the undead orc question is that there is the necromancer thing, you know, that, like, the fact that he's called the necromancer
right.
and that people are going to, whether or not, whatever it is Peter Jackson does or does not do with the necromancer on screen, everybody is going to be thinking about zombies and the undead because he's called the necromancer. So, you know, so there's a part of me which says, you know, come on, like, PJ, why fight it? You know, like, that's what everyone's thinking it anyway. Just pull the trigger, man. Like, you know, no harm done. So I can imagine it for that reason.
You think if Bolg was actually killed at that battle, that Azog might mention that when he's going after the dwarves.
Well, you know, he doesn't mention it in particular, though. Again, it would certainly, as you say, it seems like, okay, you know, dude, they cut off your hand, but get a grip, right? But if they cut off his hand and killed his son, then, you know, that's that's different. So no, I'm gonna say yes. I'm gonna do it.
You're gonna say yes?
I'm gonna say yes.
All right.
I'm gonna predict Zomborg.
Now listen.
Yes.
Two things from Harold Johnson, one of which I've just written him a note about. So Harold is pledging to use both Adderkop and Zomborg non-ironically in conversation in the next week. So I've asked him to be sure and come on to Riddles in the Dark page and let us know how he was able to do that.
Yeah.
And he also asks, back to the real world, back indeed, in a real world, doesn't necromancer come from Middle English negromancer, which just means dark arts or black magic?
We do see that in Middle English.
Where the word is often spelled nigromancy with an IG, which does refer
Okay.
to black. This very famously, by the way, is used in Sir Thomas Malory of Morgan le Fay, that she learned nigromancy at convent schools. Always leading me to the question, what do they teach them at these convent schools these days? But no, like, I mean, he very casually says this, like,
Oh, funny.
when she was a child, she was sent off to a nunnery where she learned nigromancy and all these other things, as if it were just like exactly what you would expect them to be taught in the
Like every
standard
day
curriculum
school, yeah.
of the nunneries.
I went to Catholic school and we were definitely not taught any
Not taught
nigromancy that I
black magic.
remember.
That's good. That's good. And it's not even like, I mean, if it were 100 years later, Mallory might be suspected of being, a Protestant who, because like the, Martin Luther wouldn't have been a bit
Oh,
surprised to
right.
learn that they taught them necromancy in convent schools. But
Sure, sure.
that's not where Mallory was anyway. So
Hmm.
it's kind of a funny moment, but it's certainly true. And of course, what Morgan le Fay learns in the convent school is not the same as the, well, I guess the other sorceress that Lancelot meets later on in Mallory is not exactly a necromancer so much as a necrophiliac, so never mind. Yeah, it's shit, never mind. It's really it's a family
Sounds
show.
awful.
It's pretty awful.
It's a
Yeah, no,
family
she
show.
plans to, she falls in love with him and she plans to kill him for, anyway, it's,
Oh my gosh.
never mind. But
Ugh.
but yeah,
Well, now, so, but when Tolkien wrote The Hobbit,
yeah.
necromancer did mean basically bringing the dead back to life, right? And but it seems like he would be just
Well,
that's it seems like our professor was just this sort of guy that would use maybe a Middle English meaning dark arts as opposed to.
no, quite possibly, but see, okay, there are two things. First of all, there is clear usage of the word necromancer, of necromancy, meaning using the necro root and not the Middle English black arts
Ah,
root. And
okay.
not necessarily within Tolkien, but like one that jumps out immediately to my mind is in Bram Stoker's Dracula, which was 1897.
Right.
And that it Van Helsing refers to necromancy when he is listing one of the powers which Dracula has, and he defines necromancy as the divination by the dead, which is quite literally what necromancy means. And so anyway, that is at least like one clear piece of evidence that the word within the a modern context clearly is taken to mean that. I kind of wonder if Tolkien had meant the Middle English version, if he would have spelled it differently or something.
Oh, I'm sure he would have.
Oh,
I think
sure.
he
He
mean,
might
he
have
was,
anyway. And
yeah.
the other thing that I go to there is the context in which he originally uses the word. That is,
Well, I was going to ask you, isn't it Thu? Isn't it? Because
yes,
he
Thu
usually
the
uses it with
necromancer
Thu.
in the
Yeah.
Lay of Lathian.
Right.
And it's like ghosts and spirits and stuff. It kind of
Right.
sounds like necromancy in the Van Helsing sense of divination by
Right.
the dead, having some kind of gaining information from and, sort of manipulating the spirits of the dead. Remember even the story which survives into the published Silmarillion of Gorlim the Unhappy, the companion of Beren who betrays them and who is deceived by a phantasm of his dead wife Eowyn.
That's right.
And
By
that's and it's
Sauron.
Sauron who does that.
Yeah,
Now again,
right.
it's not actually her spirit, that's just an illusion, right? But again, it's like it's another association between Sauron and, at least a vision of a dead person. So I think in the Lay of Lathian context, I think there's at least enough evidence to suspect that Tolkien is actually thinking of necromancer with actual connections to the modern version of the necro element rather than the Middle English version. But
Okay, that's interesting.
it is an interesting
More
question.
lessons, folks. You gotta stay awake in these
Right.
podcasts.
Right, but I do want to just as a closing note specify that I am not in any way suggesting that they currently teach necromancy or nigromancy at convent schools. I am not, especially in light of President Obama's recent comments, I don't want to be seen to be making any aspersions against Catholic education. So I just wanted to make absolutely sure that that is perfectly plain.
I'll have to watch what my son's bringing home a little bit.
Exactly.
There you go.
You know, you do have to just double check the curriculum. You know, it might be worth it. You know.
Well, that was our last conundrum because we have not done any digests yet for the remaining two, but we have the last two riddles.
Right.
Riddle 208 is how will the Hobbit Desolation of Smaug begin? This is our, you know, inevitable beginning riddle.
Yep. Yep.
A, action continues in real time, either with the company or somewhere else. B, return to the frame narrative of old Bilbo at Bag End. C, a flashback. D, exposition. Or E, none of the above. And let's see. Rule 208. Okay, so I know I said A. I said real time. Well, we were split. I mean, Corey said C. Dave said D. Trish said A. Laura hasn't said yet because we haven't done the digest yet. So
I'm going to split us completely because I'm going to say B. I think we're going to go back.
Okay.
Awesome. So one of us will be right.
Exactly. Yay! Hooray. That's comforting. I'm thinking about sort of the trailer in particular. I mean, of course, now we're getting into ones which we've done quite recently, just in the last month or so. And you know, very little has come to alter my feelings about, you know, my opinions about that. The one thing, if we are, and here's like a string of ifs here, if we are correct about, you know, plummeting, balding, crazy guy being a flashback of Thran and the finding of the key, that at least, I said flashback, so that it does give a the possibility, you know, it gives us a flashback to work with, which would be, and I do think that would work as a decently good opening flashback, because a flashback to Gandalf finding the key could help to propel the Thorin plot forward because it relates to Thorin's heritage, and we could get, you know, final words between Thran and Gandalf, which could be used significantly, you know, could resonate significantly with Thorin's plot in film two, while also, of course, prefiguring or setting up the Gandalf Radagast adventure into Dol Guldur that's obviously going to happen later on. Mm-hmm. So, or if it's not Dol Guldur, it's the Tombs of the
Highfells
or whatever. Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, it's basically, I do think it is something that could function pretty well as a opening flashback to the film, but you know, who knows? Other than that, I don't feel like there's very much that we've seen that has really given us any information.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see old Bilbo telling a story to the Hobbit children, and it's the story of them coming to Beorn's house. And that's how it opens up. I think that'd be really cool.
Ooh, like during his party. So the party's now underway.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It could, to give a sense of the progression of time within the frame as well. So, you know, we got right before the party in the opening scene of film one. So we get a frame shot from the middle of the party. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I want to insert a little something here. This seems like a good spot to do it. I actually put this up on the Riddles in the Dark page. So I said, let's do some math. Movie opening and time at Bjorn's house, 30 minutes. Spiders, capture by elves, Thranduil being snarky, 30 minutes. Escape, barrel chase, pick up by Bard, 30 minutes. Lake town, travel to mountain, get to door, 30 minutes. Bilbo chats with Smaug, 30 minutes. That's 150 minutes. And we haven't even covered. There's stuff we haven't covered.
Right.
Well, even if we take it down to 20 minutes, we're at 100 minutes. Well, that could work. If we
that could work.
Like, average 20 minutes between those, that could work.
Yeah, see, that's I find that hard to predict. I mean, both because I have not as clear a sense of time passing. I mean, I would have to, I mean, I think to really get a sense of that, what we would need to do is to go through and map out film one in that way and say, like, okay, what are the what would we identify as the major segments or sequences of that film, and how long was spent on each one there? Like time Bilbo spends standing around looking, glancing around Bag End and saying nothing, 25 minutes, you know, we'd have to map that out. But no, I'm just teasing because I loved that moment. Everyone else was making fun of it and how slow moving the film was, and I thought it was brilliantly done. But anyway,
brilliant.
nevertheless, you know, we would have to see how those mapped out in order to give us an idea of what would be a reasonable expectation for film two. But because I could easily see, like, the Bjorn's house scene, for instance, taking 10 minutes or 15 minutes and still feeling quite ample, depending on how that's done, you know, and what. I'm not really sure. But certainly there's a lot of stuff.
I included that with the movie opening. So the movie opening and time at Bjorn's house is 30 minutes. So, you know what I mean? It's like I was actually being fairly generous with my, you know, how much was going to be in that time frame.
Yeah, maybe. Though, again,
my first capture by Al Strandall, you know.
Yeah.
But it could work.
Though,
I mean, just,
movie,
it's, there's a lot. You know, it just seems like there's a lot
time
to cover. Yeah, that's true. Especially if you're doing a lot of, like he said, you know, the visuals and Freeman's ability to convey so much just in facial expressions is remarkable.
It will definitely be action-packed. There's a lot to cover in the second movie.
No, exactly. Especially,
you know, it suddenly occurs to me, I sure do hope that we get to have the conversation between Bilbo and Smaug in movie two. If they make us wait to movie three for that part, I'm going to be really angry.
This is starting to get towards, well, we should probably not go there because it's probably going to be our next or one of our sooner episodes of where is it going to end.
Exactly. Oh, that's true. That's true. Where's it going to end? I'll save it. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll save that up for them too. Okay. So we don't have a conundrum for this one. So we'll go to our final riddle that's been that we have so far, which is riddle 2.09. How will the political and economic relationship between Lake Town and the Elves of Mirkwood be portrayed? A, they have a trading agreement, wine or other commodities via barrels, etc., and are political allies, which is the book answer. B, they have a trading agreement but are not allied at all. C, they are allied but have no trading agreement. Or D, they are not allied and have no trading agreement. One of our famous quadrant riddles.
What did I say on
which
that?
Actually we really – you said – hold on here. You said B, and Dave and I both said A.
Right. Okay. Yes, and because my main thing is, are they going to be friends, or is like the tension between them or the manipulation of one by the other going to be a feature? And I think, yes, it is. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and you were kind of more like, weren't you talking about more like Thranduil really wouldn't, he wouldn't lower himself to ally himself with them. He considers them more like tradesmen and servants or, you know.
Right. Yeah, I can certainly, especially as he's going to, he's apparently depicted in the film, that he's not going to see them on equal ground. Well, there's very little from the trailer that we got to suggest anything about that. The one thing that's kind of evocative is that scene when Toriel and Legolas are standing there talking, and you know they're clearly like near Lake Town, right? And they're kind of looking off in that direction, and or at least that's what it looks like from the trailer, I think. And that doesn't have a very hey, it's our friends and allies kind of feel to it. Like that kind of has an outsider looking over there, talking about them and are, you know, like, because that's, if I'm remembering correctly, that's in the, like, this is not our fight. Oh, yes, this is our fight section, right? And so if they were allies, you know, and then, like, obviously anything that's about the Lake Men is going to be about them. Now, of course, when they're saying it's not our fight, it is our fight, they could just be talking about the dwarves and not talking about the people of Lake Town at all. But so anyway, I don't think there's anything very clear as far as new information to relate to this one, but the general sense that certainly in the trailer, I was not given anything which changed my mind about them being really close friends.
Yeah, I'd have to say probably B on this one, and I'm not even sure they really have a trading agreement. That river, their They're barreling down in their barrels.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like a
Is
lazy
it really a
river.
Very good
No.
No, right. Doesn't really look like a good highway, does
no,
it, for
no.
back and forth train.
Yeah. Not at all. Though the one thing to say in defense of that though is that why else are barrels tied next to the it looks like those barrels were going to be at some point released into the river, and why do that if you're not?
Well, and they're released. I mean, there's actually a lever, right? There's actually a lever mechanism, isn't it, that he releases to let the barrels
Is
go?
It? In which case,
there's literally a mechanical thing.
What are we supposed to imagine that the elves just routinely dump stuff in the river? You know, like just for waste disposal. That's a little hard to imagine.
I know. I guess maybe
Or somebody said that, you know, because they're supposed to be empty barrels going back down to Lake
Town, they're
right?
Special so elven barrels.
Over land,
maybe
and
they're
then
like
the empty ones get released.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they're like the Lothlorien boats, where they are special barrels
yeah,
that never sink and never get smashed.
That's what people have said to me about my complaint about the barrels floating.
I do love that idea.
Oh, come on.
It's hilarious. No, I just love that. I absolutely love the idea.
It just seems silly that they release barrels into this Niagara Falls, practically. You know, I mean, they're going to get smashed.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly does seem a kind of a low,
but it is very visually.
To,
it's very exciting. It's much more exciting than the alternative.
Oh, no question.
Some barrels bobbing down a leaf river.
Right, blank barrels
right.
gently
Covered,
bumping down
so
the river.
That's what Corey was saying. Corey was saying that the scene would be just these barrels. You know, you might hear a groan ever so often, you know, but that's about it. And the moonlight, you know, like that drawing of Tolkien's with Bilbo on top of the barrel and the moon. And
it could make a hilarious parody, you know, to have like
half an hour
these
of barrels,
these barrels gently bobbing and bumping up against each other on a very placid stream while playing really exciting soundtrack behind,
like,
you know, with
banjo music or
something. No, just have it be like, you know, swift action sequence, exciting music playing in the background they're just like
bobbing
and floating down, getting pulled away. Wait, hang on, it's going to catch on the side of the river. Let me pull it out into the stream again. You know, that could be hilarious.
Well, then
I don't think that's what it's going to go for.
And of course, then we've got the launching of Bomber into the air while he's still in his barrel, which is, you know, because he's so, I guess part of that is probably he's so fat he can't get out of his barrel. So he ends up in his barrel and he's launched in midair.
I am so looking forward to the dwarf barrel trebuchet. I can't wait for that sequence.
The dwarf launching.
Well, that is the end. We have come to the end of our first half of the year. Desolation of Smaug riddles. I know Comic-Con is coming up next month. I think we got a couple of weeks.
So thinking of like what is to come here in the second half of the season, we have several topics which we still need to cover, which we haven't yet. We need to talk about the dragon and the conversation with the dragon. We need to talk about the end of the film. We need to talk about the Ring of Power a little bit more and how that's going to be handled in the film. So those are some obvious topics that we need to get to. For this season on our own,
I know that Dave and I keep, you know, want to come back and visit the bromance and how that might, you know, how we see that unfolding in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of these we've kind of waited for on purpose because we're kind of waiting for a little bit more data from Jackson before we actually have the episodes.
Right. Yeah, and then on the data from Jackson front, we're going to have presumably more trailers and more images released, and we will also have, of course, Comic-Con coming up soon. But then also, let's not forget, we're going to get the extended edition of Film One.
That's right.
We will certainly want to be talking about that. That's what, November, right?
That's I heard November 12th. I don't know if that's an absolute date, but it makes sense for holiday buying that it would be like mid-November.
Right.
Also, Jackson did promise us a video log soon, quote-unquote, and that was, I believe it was last week. It was, I think it was the same day I posted your pancake picture. So, so whatever day that was.
Well, yes, the pancake. Stephen Johnson has to do... He has to do a Zomborg pancake now.
Oh, there you go. And I think he should do a coffee table book when he's done. See, here, the story behind this is that his kids gave him, I guess there's some kind of like pancake making mix kit, you know, where you have all these different tools and stuff that you can do different shapes of, with pancake batter. So he's, you know, he started using it. And so he started off, let's see, he's done Gandalf and Bilbo and Dwalin and Beaufort and Bag End. He did the front of Bag End. Mm-hmm. And then he announced to me, he goes, he sends me messages privately. He goes, no, I will do Corey Olson. I'm like, oh, my God. So I knew it was coming.
I think that needs to be your profile picture.
Yeah, no, it probably should.
Yeah, I said you should use it on your netbook. Yeah. He did, and Galadriel.
I saw the Galadriel one.
Yeah, he did it. Oh, and he did a really good Gollum. He said he felt a little funny eating Gollum, but like a thing in the back, kind of caught in the back of his throat, you know. Anyway, that was funny.
Yeah, cool.
So, well, anyway, but back to the thing. So Jackson said, quote unquote, soon we'll get a vlog, which I'm hoping means we're going to get one before Comic-Con, because certainly he'll do one at Comic-Con.
But, right.
So yeah, and we may have some more. Actually, after Comic-Con and after trailers, we may indeed, and the extended edition, we may even have some more special episodes of Riddles of the Dark, like we did for the trailer, just to sort of, you know, respond quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. No, that's great. And so yes, we'll have lots to talk about. Scheduling wise, I am not 100% sure exactly when the next episode will be. Two weeks from now is actually the week I'm moving. I will be.
Is it really? It is, yes. Laura and I are going to be at MythCon. Oh, that's right. 2 weeks. Well, 2 weeks. Laura and I are going to be at MythCon. That's the 12th, 13th, 14th. I mean, we would love to, but you're moving that weekend, aren't you?
That is the weekend. I'm driving trucks around. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. No,
we would love to be able to call you for MythCon and do a podcast with you. But Laura and I have talked about, you know, plunking our microphone down on the table in the bar and doing some podcasts like y'all did a couple years ago.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll be having like dance night again and have a little, you know, DJing.
So Laura and I will definitely report from, you know, we'll be your girls on the street from, you know, from MythCon. Right. We actually have a number. I think there's like six or seven of us from Mythgard a couple of are just attending, but there's I think at least five of us, if not six, are actually presenting papers, so we'll be well represented.
Jared has just asked the weighted question: is there a place online or any way to find out sometime beforehand when these podcasts will be? No. Answer is no. No man shall know the day nor the hour of when the next episode will be. We try
for every 2 weeks, which is why you know Corey's saying you know he's actually backpedaling from the 2 week time at this point, because that would have been the eighth, the week we're talking about the week after July 4th week, right?
Yeah.
So probably it won't be until after.
I could do that Monday the 8th. It's conceivable.
Okay.
But that's going to be my day.
Don't hold your breath, everybody.
Yeah. Exactly. It might have to be pushed back a week. Until
maybe even until like midweek the following week, because I know I'm flying back on the 15th.
We'll try to keep people posted about this, but we will see.
And Dave has been really busy. He was man of honor at his sister's wedding this past weekend, which is why he's not with us now.
Yes, there's been this like surge to matrimony in the Kale family. So
yeah, he said all four Kale children are now married.
Yeah, they all had to get married all at once.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder if there was like a deadline or something.
An expiration date.
That's right.
Some kind of family pact or something.
A sell-by date, right?
Right.
Sell-by. Right. Sell-by July 30th.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, Pete's a man of honor. Yeah. So, Pete, just to tell Pete, so Dave got married a few months ago, and his sister was his best woman. And so, because he and his sister are very close. And so when Meg got married over the weekend, then he served as her attendant. So it's man of honor, I suppose. Yeah, we call it man of honor. So she was best woman, and he's man of honor.
There you go.
Kales are awesome. Yes, kales are awesome. I agree.
Very cool.
All right. Well, that was great. Well, that was really fun. And we just on the two, right around the 2 hour mark. That's great.
Exactly.
We're not going too far. We're not going, you know, we're on our usual 2-hour thing.
Our usual
absurdly long length.
So yes, very good.
Yes.
Very good. Okay, so thanks everybody.
And we got classical education and Middle English.
There you go.
Middle English education, and I mean, this was like packed full.
There you go. There you go. And
okay, now I'll let you do it.
And we'll also say one other little teaser to throw out. We are making steps towards finalizing the details for MythMoot for next year. So we will be, before too long, we will be able to
announce. And the call for papers is out.
Yes, the call for papers is out. So anybody who would like to come and present a paper at MythMoot, we encourage you to send in a proposal. We are doing papers from the general public, so that would be excellent. We have some confirmed guests. We're going to be having some fun people joining us this year. So anyway, we will give some more details as we finish sorting everything out. But I just wanted to kind of mention as a teaser that is going to be coming, and hopefully we will have some more news for you, perhaps even by our next episode. We will see.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Hopefully. So, okay.
Okay.
Very good. So, thanks for listening, everybody, and Godspeed.